You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Manny Machado will not be a Met after all. He has signed a long-term extension to remain with the San Diego Padres. Does this clear the door for Brett Beatty to be the third baseman of the present and the future? We'll discuss that in the first segment, then in the second segment and the third segment. I was in Port St. Lucie on Sunday to watch the Mets. I want to really dive deep into what I saw from Max Scherzer and the way he can manipulate the pitch clock to his advantage. So we'll get to that in the second segment. Then to close the show, a lot of prospects on display. I'll tell you what I saw to close things out in the final segment. Before we get to that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing at JustBaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor, where I also host the Who's Better Baseball podcast, where today I'll be discussing who's better, Pete Alonso or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You'll want to check that out because I also have my top 10 first baseman in baseball live at JustBaseball.com, where I did rank Pete, spoiler alert, ahead of Vladdy. So we'll get into all of that, of course, on that show. For this one, though, big news in the baseball world that relates to the Mets, Manny Machado, a Padre for more than a decade. We really thought that the Mets were going to have an opportunity to sign either Machado or maybe even Rafael Devers next offseason. There was a point in time, actually, where Carlos Correa was going to be the Mets' third baseman. All of these different high-priced superstars that were just out on the horizon, and we thought that Steve Cohen would reel in one of those fish because he clearly had some interest in one when he signed Correa, but Correa falls through. Devers signs an extension with the Red Sox that no one really saw coming because, you know, they failed to extend Devers, and we just didn't believe that they were going, or failed to extend Devers. They did extend Devers. Failed to extend Bogarts. So we just thought, yeah, Rafael is just going to end up in that same boat hitting free agency. No, he got his deal. Machado, definitely opting out. That's what he says. Once 10 years, $400 million. Ends up getting 11 for 350. I'm sure for him, he had to look at that contract and say, do I really want to risk this? No, let's stay where I'm at on a team that's very competitive. But from the Mets' perspective, well, now look at third base next year. Unless you just love Matt Chapman, and let's be honest, why would you? Defensively, he's great, but do you really want to sign a guy that's been struggling the way he has offensively over the last couple years that has some hip issues to a long-term contract? I don't think you can even think that far ahead for a player like Chapman, even though at this point, outside of Shohei, he might be like the best possible hitter on the market. It's going to be a weak free agent class, and ultimately, all roads lead back to Brett Beatty. I was in St. Lucie today, and we will be talking about the prospects in the final segment, but you know, I will say from seeing him in person now, seeing him in person last year in AA, seeing his stint with the Mets last September, this is a guy that, you know, looks the part, absolutely. He has a big league build. He is getting better at third base. Francisco Lindor raved about the changes he made at the position over the offseason, the hard work that he put in, and the bat is going to play. Like, might he struggle against left-handed pitching early on in his career? Absolutely. That's something that a lot of these left-handed hitters have to figure out. But Brett Beatty, when it comes to facing righties, I think can hit the ground running, and you can shield him against lefties early in his career, but ultimately, this is a guy that just has such a good approach at the dish. His floor is so high as a bat because he's not going to strike out way too much. He's going to draw his walks, and he's going to make contact in the zone, and that is the name of the game in baseball right now. If you can make contact in the zone, and if you can launch too, that takes your game to a whole nother level. And this past year, we saw him make the adjustments he had to make. If you watched him in 2021, you'd say, wow, Look at the exit velocities. He hits the ball so hard, but look at that ground ball rate. Well, he took that ground ball rate and he slashed it by 20%. If you look at his ground ball rate in AA in 2021 and then what he did in AA in 2022, he made all the changes you want to make. You could say he had an inconsistent, you know, weight transfer on his load and his hands and his legs. He wasn't exactly just on one fluid motion, and he fixed that. He has such a simple approach at the plate. Brett Beatty is going to be one of, in my opinion, the best third baseman in baseball one day. I honestly believe that. Is that going to happen this year? I don't know. That's a tall task for him. But at some point over the next 3 to 5 years, I think we're going to be looking at Brett Beatty as a guy that can be an all-star at that position and can be an all-around player. I don't think he's ever going to win a gold glove at third base, but I also don't think he's going to be a detriment there. And I look at just all the different guys the Mets might send up to the plate this year, and I feel like we're going to get to a point where Brett Beatty, you're going to be as confident when he steps into the box as anyone. So I really think that ultimately, sometimes in the game, there's the trades that you made and there's the trades that you couldn't make, or the signings that you couldn't make. And sometimes it's the ones that fall through that end up being good for you. You know, when the Mets wanted to trade Brandon Nimmo, or almost did, to get Jay Bruce. Well, now Brandon Nimmo not only has been great with the Mets, but he has an 8-year contract and he is going to be a lifelong Met. Now, Zach Wheeler at one point was going to be in a trade and he ended up being, you know, a far better asset on the mound for the Mets in his last couple of years. There's moves that can be made that end up falling through, that end up working out for you. And I think if Carlos Correa ends up being hurt in a couple of years because of that ankle, and Brett Beatty in that same time is getting paid, you know, a couple of million dollars to be an all-star third baseman in the National League, you're going to be thrilled with what happened here. So in some respects, of course, it sucks. The first thing I saw today, or the first thing I thought today when I saw Machado's extension was, oh man, that's unfortunate, because you could have dreamed, right? You could have dreamed of Brett Beatty in left field and Manny Machado being the starting third baseman next to Francisco Lindor. It's not going to happen now. The Padres are doing all teams should. They're spending big, and they're keeping their stars in place. Who knows? Maybe this frees up Juan Soto in a couple years because they can't pay all four of them. Or maybe they can, and maybe they end up paying Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis, Xander Bogaerts, and Manny Machado. And if they're able to afford that and they're able to make that happen, you know, good for them. You just have to tip your hat. But for now, you have to worry about what you have. And with the Mets, I think they really do have a great option in Brett Beatty. And honestly, he's one that we will spend more time on Friday, because over the last couple of Fridays, I have been spotlighting these top prospects in the Mets system and previewing their season ahead. We did it with Alvarez. We did it with Vientos last week. Beatty, I was saving for last of the three because I really believe he can ultimately have the biggest impact this season and potentially even beyond that. So, again, unfortunate, but it is what it is. We must move on. I was in person, though, as I alluded to, today, as I'm recording this on Sunday earlier in the day, watching Mets versus Nationals. I saw Scherzer throw a couple of innings with a pitch clock. I want to discuss what I found from that in just a minute. Before we get to it, though, today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Here is why you should be going right to the store, going to Built.com to get your Built Bars today. Imagine you can have a snack that you can eat for breakfast. You can eat it after a workout. You can eat it before bed even. And you don't have to feel bad about it, because Built Bars are protein bars that taste like candy bars. They come covered 100% real chocolate, but they only come with 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, a whopping 17 grams of protein, with so many amazing flavors you can choose from, like the churro, the peanut butter brownie, the coconut almond. You can go to Built.com. You get a mixed box. Try a little bit of everything. But if you don't want to wait for that mixed box to come in, you know, from the mail at Built.com, here's what you do now. You just go to the store. That's right. You can finally get your Built Bars at your local Walmart or Sam's Club. Head to your nearest Walmart today, walk to the pharmacy section, and grab yourself a box of the cookies and cream, the double chocolate, or the coconut puffs. Or if you're close to a Sam's Club, run in, grab yourself a 13-bar box of their hit flavors, the brownie batter or the churro. You can thank me later. Go to your local store and buy Built Bars today. We'll be right back. tradition like none other, going to Port St. Lucie and watching spring training baseball with my dad. Got the opportunity to do that on Sunday, something that we've been doing since I was, you know, a little toddler screaming for Mike Piazza's autograph at the players' parking lot to now. And so I always love getting that opportunity to go out there, and it's even better when Max Scherzer takes the hill to start. And I got to tell you, you know, seeing him work with the pitch clock was fascinating. And, you know, the first inning, it is what it is. He goes out 1-2-3, no big issue, struck out two. Like, all right, whatever, this is Max Scherzer. Like any, you know, Max Scherzer outing that you've seen in the past. But then he gets into some trouble in the second inning, gives up a couple of hits, including an RBI double. There's runners on second and third, no outs. And I'm wondering, because we're very early in spring training, like, how much longer is Scherzer going to be on the hill before they grab someone from the pen to bail him out of it? But of course, Scherzer wants to pitch his way out of the jam. This is the exact type of outing that Scherzer would love. If you ask Max Scherzer, would he rather go up, six up, six down, and hit the showers and the links afterwards? Or would you rather go up and have a clean first inning and then run into a lot of trouble in the second and have to pitch your way through it? This is the type of tune-up or you know, beginning of his spring that he loves, because it allows him to work on his stuff and really get those competitive juices flowing. And to see him work with the pitch clock was really fascinating, to see how a pitcher of his stature can now manipulate this system. He's been saying it ever since the start of spring, how he loves this system for the pitcher, how in the past, the old system, the batter could really flow the, you know, control the flow of the game because they could step out whenever they wanted to and call time and really create their own pace. Now, with only one timeout per at bat, the pitcher is in charge. And to see the way Scherzer is going to utilize that clock is fascinating, because you think, okay, 15 seconds, nobody on, 20 seconds with a runner on base. That's not a long window. Will pitchers be able to ice batters and hold on to the ball long and get them uncomfortable in the box? What I saw Max Scherzer doing, he was, for one, calling his own game for a lot of it. So you watch him calling the pitch right after he throws the last one on his glove. So now Nervais just knows where to set up. He comes to a full set at about 13 seconds on the clock. 13 seconds is an eternity, because the batter has to be focused on Scherzer. He's ready to pitch. He's got his set. He's got his sign. He's looking in on you. But as a hitter, you're sitting there and you're wondering, okay, well, I know I only have a limited amount of time here. Scherzer can't wait till the clock expires. So when's the pitch coming? When's the pitch coming? And so often did I see Scherzer hold on to that ball until 1 second and then start his delivery, because he can see the pitch clock. The batter can't really look at the pitch clock. Granted, yes, he can see it in center field. There's one in center field, you know, over in Port St. Lucie, one in left center, and then one, you know, off center behind home plate. But for a batter, they're not controlling when that pitch is thrown. So he can't just be waiting for 1 second. He has to be zeroed in on Scherzer. And it creates this eternity that he's able to use to manipulate the hitter and just attack them. And then there's other times where, you know, a lot of times he was employing that strategy. Other times, after doing that, he comes set and then quick fires. And so he can really control that tempo of the game in a way that you actually couldn't before the clock, because he is in complete command. He's been saying it, but we got to see it in effect. And if you didn't watch the game, or you didn't see the recap and you were curious what happened, he got in that situation, gave up three straight hits to start the inning. Then he struck out three batters to get out of the jam and strand the two runners. And in each at bat, that's what we saw. We saw him at times, you know, maybe when he got, you know, two strikes on a hitter, he would come to a set at 13. He was throwing at 12 and he was burying a slider in the dirt, trying to get them to chase, trying to get them uncomfortable, trying to get them to react quick. Or other times he was making them sit and then he was firing a fastball by them and they were caught flat footed, or a breaking pitch that couldn't identify on him. He is going to be dynamic with this pitch clock. Verlander, too, to have guys this cerebral get this opportunity, it's going to be, honestly, an amazing thing, really, for like, this entire Mets pitching staff, because, you know, you also have Carrasco and Quintana that have a ton of experience. And so, you know, when you're maybe in October and you're going up against an experienced lineup, this might not always be the case where you can just completely outthink the batter. But when you're facing off against the Nationals, the Pirates, the Marlins, these teams that maybe don't have the hitters that are more accomplished, you're going to watch these veteran Mets use this pitch clock to their advantage, completely control the pace of the game, and dominate batters. So I love to see it. Other notes that I would say as far as the pitchers are concerned, you know, we saw Brooks Raley. Didn't really show us too much just because of how his inning worked out. It's one of those spring innings where he just kind of got through it quickly and easily. Eleazar Hernandez looked awful, as I've kind of predicted, so don't expect him to have a big impact this year, I really don't think. I mean, you can't take too much from spring, but when a guy is just getting hit so easily and he can't put anybody away, you kind of figure that the stuff just isn't there for him. But John Curtis looked really good. John Curtis, I think he touched 96. Has some rising action on his four seam. He looks really, really confident on the mound. He looks like he can throw strikes whenever he wants to. And I would not be surprised at all if John Curtis makes this bullpen. I think that there's a really good chance of that. I honestly do. And so if Curtis grabs one of the spots and you have five guys that you know, and Diaz and Ottavino and Robertson and Raley and Drew Smith, just less spots available to others. So I'm not saying it's 100% certain. There's a lot of arms in camp. But the way John Curtis looked today, I'd almost be a little bit surprised if he doesn't find his way into that opening day bullpen. Now, along with the pitching that we saw a lot of the young players. The Mets have a ton of top prospects that are at their disposal right now in Port St. Lucie. I think we're going to see a lot of this throughout the Grapefruit League. And it does show you kind of the signs of a promising future. The Mets have been avoiding trading from this farm, and you're starting to see why. I want to explain what I got to watch in just a minute. First, though, another word from our sponsors. Now, some years I go to Port St. Lucie, watch a spring training game, and by the fifth inning, I'm ready to go home, particularly if you're watching a game in February like this was, because you see the regulars get a couple of at-bats, and then usually they get off the field in like the third, and then all of a sudden the number 77s come out, the 80s, the 99s, and in the past, there's been Mets teams where there's maybe one prospect that you're interested to watch, but a lot of them you're just like, all right, I don't need to see, I hate that I was about to throw Jonas Schwee-Fargas, throw him under the bus, because, hey, I love Fargas, but there's a difference between Jonas Schwee-Fargas and Alex Ramirez and Kevin Parada and Ronnie Mauricio, and then, of course, the guys we have been talking about are Mark Vientos and Brett Beatty. But, again, there was all of the talent on display. At one point, I think almost all of those guys were sharing a field together. We did see more of the McNeils, the Lindors, Escobar, because they're going to the WBC. So they actually gave them, a couple at bats each, and they were out there for five, six innings. But, Viento started at first base. We got to see his at bats, and he comes up against a lefty. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, this is where I'm really interested. Obviously, I want to see him hit against righties too, but when he's up against a lefty, and this lefty was throwing pretty hard, 94, I think, 95 is what he was topping out at. I wasn't familiar with him. I can't even remember his name. I think it was Francisco Rodriguez, I believe, for the Nationals. But regardless, you get Vientos in the box against him, and early in the at-bat, 109 miles per hour off the bat, left center field, he just hits a rope. RBI double. So to see him in that spot, just feast against a lefty, that's what I was spending the whole show on Friday discussing, how he has that potential. And I tweeted this after I got the hit. I mean, I don't see anybody in this 40-man roster that is better suited to mash lefties than Mark Vientos. And obviously I'm not just bringing the entire team into the play, because that Pete Alonso and Starling Marte and Lindor are going to be out there every day, going to be out there against left-handed pitching, and even Eduardo Escobar to a certain extent is better from the right side. But Mark Vientos, compare him to a Darren Ruff, compare him to a Danny Mendick, who, again, we're really kind of unsure what his status is with the injury. Again, I keep on referencing the interview he did with Metsmerize, where he said he'd be ready for opening day. We still have yet to see him, so I don't know about that one. Regardless, Mark Vientos can mash left-handed pitching. Mark Vientos wants to be in the big leagues. And by God, I would go with the Vogelback Vientos platoon, because what did that platoon do in this game? Although they weren't platooning, they were both in the starting lineup. They each had an RBI double. So I really think that's where this team should go. But then you also have a guy like Brett Beatty, who is out there. And I mean, I think he got one hit in this game. Make sure about that. I mean, he did hit a home run the other spring game on Saturday, and he had a double and a hit in the inter squad game. Beatty came off the bench, got two at bats. He scored a run. Did he draw a walk? I guess he just got on base. My bad on that. I mean, he looked decent in his at bat. He had a bat against a lefty where he struck out, where he didn't look good, which is what I was saying before about him against left-handed pitching. Against the righty, you know, I remember it looking like a good at bat. But regardless, you saw Beatty, you saw Vientos. You saw Alex Ramirez score on Vientos' double. He came in as a pinch runner for Tommy Pham, who drew a walk. He scores from first base in the double and flew around the bases. So that was good to see. Ronnie Mauricio, though, he hit one. And it was funny because here was my initial reactions. I was actually texting my buddy Armladen, who is a great prospect analyst for us at Just Baseball, who is going to do the Mets farm system soon here. He's going to give his top 10 Mets prospects. I do a whole breakdown, and I will have him on the show to discuss it. But we've been going back and forth on Ronnie Mauricio forever because Aram did not like him as a prospect. He's starting to warm up to him from the way he's performing in the Winter League and what he started doing at the end of last season and now in spring. And I was like, dude, Ronnie Mauricio just hit one. It sounded like Pete Alonso off the bat. It had to be 110 miles per hour. Then later, I see a stat on Twitter that it was the first time the Mets have had a hitter hit a home run that went 450 feet at 110 miles per hour other than Pete Alonso. That's the type of pop we're talking about with Ronnie Mauricio, particularly when he's swinging it from that left side. When he connects with one, it is monstrous juice. I mean, you look at Francisco Alvarez, you look at Mark Vientos, you look at Brett Beatty. All these guys got pop. But I don't know if anyone, when they connect with the baseball, hits it further than Ronnie Mauricio, and that's saying a lot. He is a huge guy, so strong. After the game, they asked him, you know, with Lindor on this team, you know, what position would you like to play if you can't play shortstop? He said third base. And I would not entirely rule out that Ronnie Mauricio is the third baseman of the future over Brett Beatty. And Beatty's in left. I mean, I don't know. Ronnie Mauricio could be that good. So to see that, it was so impressive the way he exploded on that baseball. That is what you really have to dream on here. I mean, he has some tools, but that's the loud tool. That's the tool that you take note of. It is his power. And we'll see if he can formulate a decent game around that. If he can, you know, be able to get enough discipline to utilize that power, improve the hit tool so that he's making that quality contact more often and find a home defensively. But he makes you dream. When you watch Ronnie Mauricio in person, it's hard not to get excited about what he could be. Because he just looks like a superstar. He looks unbelievable in person. It's just when you look at some of the stats over the years that makes you sour on him as a prospect. So we'll see if he can clean it up. He's still very young, and what he does this year, likely in Syracuse the whole season as a starting shortstop, he is either going to force the Mets' hand to find him another position he can play on this team, or he's going to become an extremely valuable trade chip at that deadline if the Mets have to make a move. So love to see that. The last piece to discuss, game ended by Kevin Parada throwing out a runner at second base. So it was cool to see him. That's pretty much all that we saw of him to take note of. But still, nice to see the other catching prospect that's top five in this system, likely, behind Alvarez, make a big play to end a game. So if you haven't, and obviously it's early in spring, so, I mean, there are only a couple games you could have gone to. But if you can go to Port St. Lucie this year, I strongly recommend it. The vibes are great out there, and you are going to see, along with, of course, you know, your stars that are left after the WBC guys clear out, You're going to see a lot of young talent that could make big, big impacts on this organization in the not too distant future. So anyway, though, that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB Prospects, hosted by Lindsey Crosby. Locked On MLB Prospects is where you want to go to learn about the stars tomorrow. You follow Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get podcasts.